Just to begin by noting something which I guess is obvious to all of us in terms of this time of year, but just to make the connection that we have now, we're commemorating both what we call Avelus Chadasha, the morning that comes after a person passes away, literally called New Morning, meaning something that happened very, very recently, the loss of a relative. And of course, this time of year, today having been Rosh Chodesh Av and Tisha B'Av coming next week, is what the Gemara and Yevamos calls Avelus Yeshana, Old Morning. What's the difference between Avelus Chadasha and Avelus Yeshana? So we're not going to go into all the details right now. There's a whole bunch of different aspects which are different. We will touch on some of them tonight. But just in terms of the concept, conceptually, we know that Avelus Chadasha is not something that you need somebody to push you, to motivate you, to mourn, to feel the emotions. And this we mentioned in my series 2 weeks ago as well. When, God forbid, a relative passes away, you feel it. It's the emotions are so raw, and you're in such shock that you can't live a normal life for at least the first day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, week, a month. Obviously, after that, nothing is ever the same. But even just regular day-to-day things, it takes quite a while to get back into it. That's Avelus Chadasha, when you're just so struck and you can't take it. You can't go on living. You don't know what your life is supposed to mean, etc., etc. Nobody needs to tell you, oh, you, go mourn. Go sit on the floor. Don't eat meat and wine when you're in owning. Don't shave. Don't change your clothes. It's part of the fabric. It's part of the emotion that comes along with the time. You don't really need the halacha to tell you don't do this, because in your mind you already feel it. That's what we discussed again previously. That's Avelus Chadasha. Avelus Yeshana, on the other hand, when it comes to Tisha B'Av and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it's not so simple. Because we think, oh, well, yeah, we're sad that the temple was destroyed. But day to day you go around, we all do our normal, go about our normal daily lives. And it's very hard for us to get into the mentality that something was taken away, that we're missing something. And that's the challenge of Avelus Yeshana, and the directions of the two Aveluses are also exactly the opposite. Avelus Chadasha starts out at the peak, which is, again, Aninus and the funeral, and Avelus the Shiva, which is when all of the highest restrictions, the most serious prohibitions are in place, or things that you can't do. And the emotional, again, the emotional shock is at its highest. And then slowly, slowly, as you get back into regular life, it goes down. When you get to the Shloshim, the 30 days, then less of the restrictions apply. And then for a parent, if you have 12 months again, less of the restrictions apply. When it comes to Avelus Yeshana of Tisha B'Av, it's exactly the opposite. We go backwards. We go up, starting from, for Ashkenazim at least, the 3 weeks, and then into the 9 days, and then Shavua Shechal Bo from the beginning of the week, and then Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is almost on the level of sitting Shiva. And the reason why it goes backwards is because for Tisha B'Av, we need to slowly ease ourselves back into the mentality of realizing that something is missing. It's not something that comes automatically, that we have this emotional shock. It's something that slowly, slowly you need to think about, well, what are we missing? What don't we have? Why do I feel like I want the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt? Even if I'm here in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, but yet, I have to realize that there's still a long way to go. And that's what this time period of 3 weeks allows us to do, to think and to reflect about exactly where we're going and where we want to be shortly, hopefully, with the Beis HaMikdash coming back, and why we don't have it and what we're missing. Just to one quick thought, I had to get this in. So that I hit home in my mind last week. So there's actually a couple of us here that went. We snuck into Kever Yosef last Thursday night in Shechem, and it was my first time going. I have to say it was what an experience. Basically, what they do, if you're familiar, is that Shechem, of course, is a major Palestinian city these days. It's not so simple to get into Shechem anymore. So what the army has to do basically is to sneak people in the middle of the night. Again, I think officially, legally, I think it's permitted. But practically, of course, if you went in the middle of the day, even with whatever it is, you're going to have a lot of angry Arabs, riding at you. Shechem is not exactly the nicest Arab city around. There are a lot of other places that maybe the Arabs would be a little nicer to us. But Shechem is not one of those, from what I understand. And therefore, there's no other way to do it, apparently, other than basically to take buses to meet outside, about 15, 20 minutes outside at Tzomet Tapuach, about 1 o'clock in the morning, 1:30 in the morning. And basically we had about 15 or 20 buses that came there. And all together, we went together with the army. We had to wait before we got into Shechem, about another 20 minutes sitting on the road there with our 15 buses. Finally, we get in and we're driving in the middle of this Arab city. It's really crazy. About 20 minutes later, after getting hit by a rock at one point from the buses were bulletproof, don't worry. And then again, seeing what's out there, and then finally get out and get to Kever Yosef. And you have a mob scene of hundreds of people running into the Kever. So that was very, very special. Very, very special experience. But what I just wanted to highlight is that, just think about, you think, well, we're back in here in Eretz Yisrael. This is wonderful. And we have our state and our country. But this is not the way it's supposed to be, okay? It's not supposed to be that to get into one of the holiest sites, the Kever of Yosef HaTzadik, that you have to sneak in the middle of the night at 2 o'clock in the morning under heavy army guard in order to be able to simply daven. That's just not the way that we're supposed to have it here. We know the famous statement of, you know, Chazal that that there were three places that the Jews rightfully own and that the non-Jews, the Goyim, can never argue belongs to them because of the fact that we bought it. Our ancestors paid money for. Everybody know what they are, of course. Har Bais, Chevron, Maras HaMachpelah, and Shechem. And yet, look out there today and you see, well, every single one of those three are three of the most contested sites in the entire country. And again, you think about what are we missing during these days, and that should at least be able to propel us a little bit more in the direction of understanding that, yeah, we're not quite there yet, and the Avelos Yeshana, the old Avelos, still, we're still mourning, we're still right in the thick of things, waiting for Hashem to bring back the true existence here in Eretz Yisrael of Yemos Moshiach and the base of Mikdash. So as we go through the rest of the Shir, so we'll see a couple times along the way that there are some parallels between the Avelos Chadasha, the individual Avelos, after a relative passes away, and Avelos Yeshana, of the national communal Avelos for the Churban. Okay. I have some sheep here. If you want to pass them out, I don't know if there's. I don't think there's enough for everybody, but you can share. So there might be enough for every two people. The sheet basically on the first side is an outline of some of the different topics that come up that we'll discuss momentarily, and the second side is basically some of the makoros from the Shulchan Aruch that are related to some of these points. The topic tonight is basically nihugim, customs, practices, and halachos that are relevant in a base avel, in a house of mourning, when a relative is sitting shiva for their loved one. And we'll go through three areas here in the next 25 minutes or so that are relevant there. Number one, customs that take place that are done or not done in the base avel. Number two, issues having to do with tefillah, with davening. And number three, pointers concerning nichama avelim, comforting the mourner, how to do so, and other aspects of that. Let's start with part one. What are some of the things that are customary to be done in the Beis HaAvel? So if you look at the first one here, the first one is the Sudas Havra, Sudat Havra'ah, which is done immediately after the funeral. The relatives finish the burial and come back to wherever they've decided to sit Shiva, and that's also a whole discussion where to sit Shiva. The ideal practice, which is not often practical today, but the ideal practice mentioned in the postgame is actually that the best thing to do is sit shiva where the person passed away. That house where he actually passed away is considered to be, let's say, the highest possible level of sitting shiva there for his neshama, etc., etc. Of course, today that's not really possible. What'd you say?
You live now. We passed away. It's passed away in the hospital. You don't go to the
So exactly. So that's the point. So you're not going to sit shiva in the hospital, I don't think. So again, if it's something which is actually possible, which in my case, when my wife's father passed away, he actually passed away at home. Their house in New Jersey, in Fairlawn, so they actually sat Shiva there. But in most cases, that's not practical. And therefore, today, what we're really done is we sit Shiva wherever is easiest for people to come, even Nachum Avon, wherever is easiest for the mourners. And there are sometimes families that move around, they sit Shiva in different places in order to allow different mourners to come. That we're not going to get into tonight, but there is a discussion about that because you're actually not allowed to leave the house in mourning during the Shiva. But in that case, when you're doing it for the purpose of other people coming, so today the custom is often to allow that. In any case, the Sudas Havra is basically the meal which is served to the mourners immediately after they come back from the cemetery. What's interesting about this Suuda is that it's not supposed to be served from the food of the Avel himself, which again might be common sense, but it's actually halacha as well. The sources on the second side, I apologize, they're not numbered, but it's the top source there from the Shulchan Aruch and Yoredeya. It's in the Shinayim Tes. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Avel, I apologize for the extra letters here from the Bar Ilan, which I didn't have a chance to take out. Avel asur la'achol mishalo besuda rishona. The Avel is actually not allowed to eat from his own food at the first Seuda that takes place upon returning from the funeral, from the cemetery. The second meal is permitted, but not the first meal. Mitzvah, where does he get his food from? Mitzvah al shchenav shachilu mishalahem. So the mitzvah is for the neighbors and for friends to come and bring the mourner food that they have. So that he should not eat from his own food. Okay, so we're not going to go into this now, but essentially here the Shulchan Aruch is simply saying that you're allowed to swap, meaning you can feed somebody else when they're an avel, and they can then feed you, God forbid, if you become an avel. But again, the point here is that for the first meal, everybody else is supposed to bring the food. If you choose to fast and you don't want to eat until the nighttime, then already you can do that. But the point is that if the avel is going to eat in the afternoon after coming back from the cemetery, then the meal is supposed to come from everybody else. Yeah.
It seems like one of the only things on the sheet that's halacha and not a custom. Most everything's a custom, right, except for
most things.
Meal.
Most things. Yeah. I mean, we'll discuss some of the other things, but that's one of the actual halachas which is brought as a halacha rather than a custom. Correct. It's interesting if you think about the logic behind this. Why do you think that this was instituted as something which was important? And I think the logic is very clear when you think about it for a minute. And this I mentioned also in my series of Shiurim 2 weeks ago. This idea is mentioned by Rav Goldman in his sefer here, Me'olam Ba'olam, a very, very nice sefer in Hebrew, which is Sefer HaBechala Avilim. You can buy it here in Israel. And my father, Rabbi Joseph Ozurowski, who I also mentioned 2 weeks ago, also wrote a book in English on Avilim called To Walk in God's Ways, which is published by originally by Aronson. It was reprinted recently. So he also focuses on many of the pastoral and psychological aspects of Avelus. And he also points out the same idea that what we're doing here is transitioning from the mourner having his own, having to bear the feelings of suffering, of mourning, of loss on his own, into the community support. That's basically what Shiva is about on a psychological, on a svara level. And the first meal, the Sudas Havra, when the community first is able to show their support in a tangible way that the avel can actually recognize. Meaning at the funeral, the avel is still, they realize that people are there, but you're still all very much in your own world when the kavur is actually taking place, when the burial is right in front of you. You finally get back to the house, and then everybody comes and brings food, etc., etc. So then already it's the first opportunity that you really have to recognize that the community is there for you, and that you really need their support. And that's, I think, part of the idea of this kasta, this halacha really, of Sudas Havra, that everybody has to chip in to make the avil feel that he's not alone, that everybody's there to support him. Okay. Let's go to the next couple things in the outline here. Most of these, again, we mentioned, as David mentioned, are mostly customs. And number two, there's a very widespread custom to cover the mirrors in a house in Beis HaAvel. It's interesting that it's very hard to actually find the source for this custom. If you look in the classical Makoros, anybody here has learned Hilchos Avelus, you won't really find it. Okay, yet when you ask people, what do you know about a Shiva house, I think the first thing everybody would say is, oh, you cover the mirrors. So, again, the custom is very widespread, but it's not mentioned in so many of the earlier sources, but generally it should be done, certainly. What's the reason for it? Why do we all cover the mirrors? Anybody remember what the reasons are?
Something that represents some the image of a person.
Okay.
And not celebrating the image.
Oh, exactly right. So there's actually a few reasons that are given in a number of the later sources. Some of these, the modern Sfarim discusses. So one reason is exactly that when you're in Avelus, so you're supposed to be focusing away from the Gashmias, away from your physical appearances. And certainly a mirror is where you look to see, oh, does my hair look okay? Brush a little more, pull this down, whatever it is. The mirror is symbolic of the physical appearance, which we're trying to avoid focusing and stressing on during, what'd you say? Right, exactly, during the days of Shiva. So that's one of the main reasons why we don't generally have the mirrors open. We try to cover them. The other reason, which is mentioned also, is because generally we daven in the Beis HaAvel, so the halacha is that you're actually not supposed to daven in front of a mirror and also in front of a picture. So this is another aspect that some folks can say, that really, at least during the times of davening, if you have a portrait, like a picture of a person, that also should be covered in the Beis HaAvel when you're davening there for a similar reason. Those are two main reasons that are suggested as to why the custom is to cover the mirrors. Number three, right here, eating or brachos. This is a very widespread custom, not so much among the Ashkenazim. Among the Ashkenazim, it's actually not so accepted to do this, at least not in a main way. It's often done. There's often food there, but for the Sfardim, this is something which is like a hakbara, something that they're very, what would you say? They're not just careful about it, they're insistent about it. Please, you must take a piece of cookie or fruit and make a bracha, and have in mind that your bracha is going to be to ilui neshama of the person that passed away. Okay, so David, you saw this at when you sat Shiva. But again, anybody who's been on the Sfarim, it's again a very, very famous custom that they all do, and they will tell you that you really should, they will encourage you to do so. among Ashkenazim, it's not really such a big thing to be eating ili the neshama, to make a bracha for that purpose. That's another aspect. Number four here, this is something which is also, again, it's mentioned in the poskim, but it's also very, very strong in terms of its force, is the sitting on a low chair, that Avelim are not supposed to sit on a regular height seat. They're supposed to sit much closer to the ground. Again, there are different discussions about exactly what that means. Does it mean it has to be on the actual ground? Generally, what's accepted today, and this, by the way, is relevant to Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av also, we're all Avelim in this regard, and we all sit on the ground. Generally, the poskim say today that either a short chair, a low chair, which is within a tepach of the ground, or three tefachim from the ground. Again, tefach is roughly 8 centimeters, according to some of the shittos, maybe a little more. But again, roughly that amount. That's the basic range of opinions for if you are allowed to sit on low chairs. That would be about the chair. Again, regular sized chairs not, but lower chairs generally yes. Today, it's usually accepted that people that come to be Menachem Avel to visit the Avel do not have to sit on low chairs, even though in some of the poskim that's not so clear. But today it's assumed that the Avel himself doesn't mind if everybody else sits on a regular height chair, and therefore today generally the Avel or Avelim themselves only sit on the lower chairs. But again, on Tisha B'Av, that's something which of course is relevant to all of us. Somebody who medically is not can't do that, it's too difficult for them to sit on the ground, then it's permitted for them to sit on a bit of a higher chair. But generally, if you're able to, it's best to sit on the ground. My wife, when she was in Avela, so she was actually expecting, and she probably would have been allowed to sit on a regular chair, but she wouldn't. She said no. She insisted on sitting on on the lower chairs with everybody else. But that's the concept there. Two other things that are mentioned here that I have in the outline. Of course, the Ner Neshama, it's a very widespread custom also to have a Yahrzeit candle that lasts for all 7 days. So generally what people have today is you have the really, really big ones that can last for a whole week. Again, if you don't have that, so you get a few small ones, whatever it is. But again, the idea of Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam is of course a very, very significant idea, that that the candle of God is, so to speak, the soul of a person, the neshama of a person. And here also I think there's a very deep idea which we sort of intuitively can understand this, and we already know this, that the neshama in a certain sense is like a candle, because a candle, you can put your finger straight through, it might hurt, it'll burn you, but physically the properties of fire are not such that they take up space in a way which no other property can be in that space at the same time. The same way that a neshama is also not physical, the neshama is the spiritual part of the body. The neshama of course infuses the body with spirituality, with godliness when it's alive. But when the body passes on, when the body expires, the neshama remains. The neshama continues and goes up to Shammai in the same way that a candle, the flame, is not physical, but yet the flame can flicker on. So that's the reason also why there's a custom to keep a Yahrzeit candle in the house during Shiva. The last thing in this section of Minhagim in the Beis HaAvel is the Birkas HaMazon, the benching. This is very, very interesting that in the Shulchan Aruch here, I don't know if I put it on the sheet. Yeah, I did actually. One of the things I put on the sheet here. If you look at the second source on the sheet here. So one of the other halachas that's actually mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, and some of this actually comes from the Gemara, believe it or not, is that they said that there was an extra addition to the Birkat HaMazon in the Beis HaAvel. So here, we have here Kishmavarchan Birkas Mosin Vesavil, Omer Bracha Ravias Knusach Zuyu. The fourth bracha of a Tova Metiv, they add in the following text to the Nusach. Bracha Tashem Kidim Alachalam, Hakavinu, Malkenu, Boreinu, Gualenu, Kidoshenu, Kidoshakov, Amelacha Chaya Tovia Metiv, Kelames, Dianames, Shofet, Bitzedek, etc., etc. There's a whole paragraph that it goes on. We're not going to read the whole thing now, but this is all mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya. So again, the idea, of course, here is to remind you that HaTov HaMeitiv actually was instituted, according to the Gemara, at least one of the main reasons, was because some of the people that were killed in the revolt in Beitar were actually allowed to be buried. That's what one of the things the Gemara says. So here also, that bracha is really related directly to mourning, to Avelus. So here also, we're mentioning HaTov HaMeitiv, that Hashem is good, even though we don't see He's always good necessarily during a period when we're in mourning. But certainly we recognize that on the higher level of things, Gamzu L'Tova, everything is for the best. Hashem knows what He's doing, and Hashem just judges justly, as you might say. That's an interesting addition to that the Shulchan Aruch mentions for benching. And in the third bracha also, it's not here, but there's also a text which is added in the third bracha according to according to so many of the poskim, which actually says is called Nachim. And very fascinating. Nachem Hashem Elokeinu Esavilei Yerushalayim Esavilim HaMisavlim Beivel Hazeh. Hashem should comfort the mourners of Jerusalem and the mourners that are mourning in this house of mourning, etc., etc., etc. They conclude the bracha, bracha to Hashem Menachem Tzion B'Yan Yerushalayim. Again, very fascinating. The bottom line today is that many poskim say today the custom is not to say these brachas. Okay, if you've ever been in, I don't know how many of you that were in Avila said these brachas, added this into the text of your benching. Most people today do not add this in, and it seems that most Sfarim today say that the custom is not to do so, even though it's actually mentioned in the Sfarim, in the Halacha, it's mentioned, but for whatever reason, this sort of fallen out of the commonly practiced thing. But there are a number of Rabbanim that do suggest that you should do this. I heard actually from YU, from Rav Schechter. I believe that Rav Schechter said that it's actually a good idea to keep these in, as the Shulchan Aruch says. But again, the prevalent custom today is that most people do not add them in. But you see here again the connection of the Nachim, the connection between Yerushalayim and the Avelus of the Jewish people in destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and the individual mourner. There's this link here between each person who's mourning and the rest of Klai Yisrael mourning for Jerusalem. And again, during this time of year, we feel this, that we're all in it together. It's, you know, just like every person has to mourn, God forbid, for a relative that passes away, we also have to feel the same way for destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And also, we can support each other, meaning each one has to support the other in their time of need. Especially on Tisha B'Av, when we're all mourners, we all have to band together to really feel the comfort that hopefully we'll get from this destruction once we feel that the destruction is there. That's the part we have to feel beforehand. Okay, any comments or questions before we go on to the second section? Okay, good. The second discussion is about the customs of davening that take place in a Beis HaAvel. There are a number of big things that we do in a house of mourning when we daven there. Again, the custom is generally to have a minyan there, if possible. I didn't mention every single thing here, but these are the main ones, the ones that are on the sheet here that come up. Number one is no tachanun. Okay, there's generally speaking, this is mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. If you look in the third source on the sheet, it says nagu shaloli pull out the Beis HaAvel. The custom is not to fall on their faces, meaning referring to nefilat apayim or tachanun in the house of a mourner. That's generally not done. So that's the first thing. If you go to a Beis HaAvel, you get out of tachanun. Okay, shouldn't do it for that reason, obviously. But that is something that happens in the Beis HaAvel. If you look at that's the Mishnah Berurah there. So he says, well, why is that so? Meaning, why do we not say tachanun in a Beis HaAvel? So look what he says here. Very, very interesting. Hainu kol sheva. That means all 7 days of mourning. That the midas hadin, the attribute, the God's quality of justice, is sort of hanging on top of you at that time. Yeah. Okay, maybe not just the avil, but especially the avil.
So, it's like a sword. Kind of
like, yeah, so that's also an expression, very good. That's another expression that is mentioned in the Gemara, which is not really mentioned in this context, but it's mentioned in the Gemara in Moed Katan, that he should feel that there's a sword on top of him for the first couple of days. It's very scary, meaning again, we don't always feel that so much, but maybe we do feel it. I don't know. That
the mortality is,
I guess that part we for sure feel, meaning you feel the mortality up close. Somebody passed away and you feel, oh wow, this could happen to me also, this could happen to any of us. And therefore, because Tachanun, if you look through Tachanun, I don't know how many people ever actually did this, how many people actually read through Tachanun and saw what it said, just mumble through it every day in davening, but it's actually a very beautiful tefillah. It's from Tillim. Again, there are different versions of what we say, of course, between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. Ashkenazim, we say Vayomer David El God. The Sfaradim have a different parak of L'David Esa Elecha Nafshi Esa, however it goes. But either way, the concept of Tachanun is to say how, you know, difficult it is and how hard things are and how much suffering we have, etc., etc. And the problem is, if you start saying things like that in a Beis HaAvel, then we're afraid that, God forbid, that's going to make things worse once we already had one tragedy, God forbid, that maybe by saying Tachanun we're going to create more tragedies for ourselves, and therefore we don't want to raise the level of the Midas Hadin, and we don't say Tachanun in a Beis HaAvel. What's interesting, of course, is that on Tisha B'Av we also don't say Tachanun. Now Tisha B'Av, again, the main reason it's given on Tisha B'Av is not necessarily the same thing as this. It's more the idea of Tisha B'Av is a moed. Tisha B'Av is a day where it's actually an appointed day. The Gemara quotes the pasuk of Kra Alai Moed Lishpor Bacharai. Call for on me a moed, an appointed time, a set time to break the young ones, meaning basically to mourn for the destruction of the temple. So they refer to it as a moed, the Gemara says, and therefore for Tisha B'Av also, in a certain sense, is actually a positive. There's like a silver lining in the cloud that it's a set time, and maybe one day will be turned into a happier time. And again, for Tisha B'Av, that's at least part of the reason why we don't say Tachanun on Tisha B'Av. It's sort of like the opposite of what happens in the Beis HaAvel. That's in terms of tachanun. Lam natseach yadcha Hashem yom tzara tilam parak chaf, that we also say after Ashrei in the morning. So that also is not said in the base of Avil. Similar reasoning to the first point of the tachanun. Birkas Kohanim we'll come back to in just a second. Kriyas haTorah in the base of Avil. So that, of course, the custom is to bring a sefer Torah to the base of Avil and to read the Torah there. However, because it's not so simple to take a Torah outside of the shul, that's a discussion in the Shulchan Aruch in Orach Chaim, that generally speaking, it's not considered to be kavodik to the sefer Torah to bring it out for a short period of time. So therefore, again, at least to have a makom kavod, that when you bring the sefer Torah out, it's supposed to have its own special aron that it comes with, ideally. And some people actually are makbid to read the Torah three times in the Beis Avel. Again, that's not mentioned in the earlier poskim, but it is mentioned by some of the later poskim as something which is a nice thing to do. But the most important thing is really to make sure that the aron is in its own special proper spot, which is designated only for the aron kodesh. So that's the problem. That's why people get stuck sometimes. So those that are makbid and reading it three times, generally what they do is they try to have a minyan in the base oval for Shabbos Mincha. So you have Kriyas HaTorah at that point. But again, I mentioned the earliest source, at least that I saw, that said it was in the Aruch HaShulchan. He's one of the ones that said it. And again, more recently, it's become a little bit more of a widespread custom. But it's not mentioned in the earlier sources. It's, again, the main halacha really is that the Torah has to be in a makom kavod, which is basically the aron. That's in terms of Kriyas HaTorah. In terms of the Avil Shliach Tzibur, again, I didn't really go into this so much here. The sources, I don't have anything there. But again, the custom is at least for a parent, that when you're sitting Shiva for a parent, so the custom is generally that the Avil usually is at least one of the Avilim does serve as the Shliach Tzibur. Again, for somebody who's sitting Shiva not for a parent, that's not necessarily the custom. But for a parent, ideally, if you know the Tavening well enough, that's preferred, if possible. But not, again, not 100% required.
But it's yeah, during the Yom Tov or like Hanukkah, let's say, I don't think that that's the custom.
Correct. Again, we're talking right now about the actual Shiva house itself. Okay. Then there's an additional custom that many people have, that once you're finished with Shiva during Shloshim and the 12 months, that the Avil often will be the Shliach Tzibur in the Shul. That's a separate thing.
No, I mean in the Shiva house itself.
Well, but usually they're not saying Shiva during Yom Tov anyway.
No.
What do you mean by
Right.
Okay. Good.
It was like celebrating, I guess.
Right. So you're right. So on Chanukah and Rosh Chodesh, there is, there may be certain ideas to not to. That part of that may be based on the question of Hallel. Okay. Which I'll just mention briefly. Did I put it here? I didn't even put it here. So Hallel's whole discussion. The Avil is not allowed to say Hallel during this time. So there's actually a big discussion what to do in a Beis HaAvel on Rosh Chodesh or Chanukah. In addition to what you're saying, also for that reason, if the Avil can't say Hallel, maybe nobody should be saying Hallel in the Beis HaAvel. So there's different opinions about this in the poskim. Halacha l'maaseh is usually accepted in most places today. I don't know if this is true for the Sfardim, but certainly for the Ashkenazim, is that the Avil himself walks out, and everybody else says Hallel in the Beis HaAvel. Okay, what'd you say? Yeah. Right, that's generally what's accepted in most places for Ashkenazim, at least. That's what's usually done. But again, there are different opinions. Some people say that everybody else walks out and says Hallel. Some people say nobody says Hallel. But again, the minhag, the generally accepted minhag, is the other walks out and everybody else says Hallel in the place. Just before we get to the Lordim Mishum Milcha Marav, I'll just mention Birkas Kohanim. So this is a really interesting issue here in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, do you say Birkas Kohanim in a Beis HaAvel? So if you look here in the sources on 1, 2, 3, 4, and source number 4, okay, so this is the Shulchan Aruch and Orach Chaim. It's in Kuf Chaf Ches. I apologize here also. The Bar Ilan, some of these letters got in the way a little bit. But try to bear with me. So the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah say the following. Achar Shiva Simei Avelus, Nose Kapav, Uvesoch Shiva Simei Avelus, Yetiv Beis HaKnesses B'Shah Shekori Kohan. Sorry, the Aleph should be at the end of the word Kori there. So he says in the Shulchan Aruch that after the 7 days of Avelus, then the Avel himself does Duchen. He does do Birkas Kohan. During the 7 days of Avelus, during Shiva, the Avel should leave the Shul at the time when they call out for the Kohanim, which either means Kohanim, or some people say before that, up to the point of Ritzeh, he should leave the Shul. So the question is, well, what do we do with that? First, let's read the Ramah, and then we'll try to explain how that gets applied today. V'yesham the Ramah says, "Dechol zman ha'avelus afilu ad yudbeis chodesh al-avi ve'al-imo einu noseas kapav." Some people say, says the Ramah, that the entire time of Avelus, even the 12 months that you're in mourning for a parent, you shouldn't duchen. So we'll start with Chutz Laretz. That's the easy part. Okay, the Chutz Laretz, the accepted custom, is that, again, we don't duchen every day in Chutz Laretz, because, again, for whatever reason it is, there are all sorts of stories about this with the Vilna Gaon and others that tried to reinstitute the practice in Chutz Laretz, and weird things happened every time they tried to do it. There was a fire in the shul, this and that, all sorts of interesting things. The bottom line is in Chutz La'aretz, we don't duchen every day. We do duchen in Chutz La'aretz on Yomim Tovim. So in Chutz La'aretz on Yomim Tovim, the custom follows the Ramah that generally, at least for Ashkenazim, Avelim do not duchen on Yomim Tovim. They walk out beforehand. That's the generally accepted custom. Chutz La'aretz for Ashkenazim. Sephardim, yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Kohanim that are Avelim. Right now, we're still in Chutz La'aretz, okay? During the week of the Shiva, it's not a question, because we're not duchening anyway during the week. And Yom Tov is the question. Yom Tov, the Avelim themselves, generally walk out during Yod Beis Chodesh. Here in Eretz Yisrael, it's a whole different story, because here we duchen every day, and of course, duchening, at least when you're called, is for Doraisa. So here, if you look again at the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, so they don't discuss exactly what happens, meaning in the Shulchan Aruch, they talk about duchening in the Shul. They say during Shiva, in the Shul, the Kohen walks out. Okay, now we don't go to shul. Now, the custom today is we have sit shiva in the base avil. That's preferable. You're not really supposed to go to shul today, even though that's also a discussion. But again, what'd you say? Okay, so Shabbos is a question. Generally speaking, the way that it would work in both cases is the following. From the context of the Shulchan Aruch, it sounds like the Avelim themselves do not duchen. Okay, this is generally in most places, not all places. In most places in Eretz Yisrael, that's the accepted practice. The Avelim themselves will walk out, either from the shul on Shabbos or in the base avil during the week, and they will not be there during duchening. The question is, and that, by the way, some people don't do that either. We'll get back to that in a second. But the question is, even if the Avelim walk out, what about the rest of the Kohanim? Do the rest of the Kohanim duchen, let's say, in the base avil? So here you actually have some different opinions about this, different customs, whether the rest of the Kohanim should duchen in the base avil or not. In Yerushalayim, the minhag in Yerushalayim is generally that they do duchen, and some people actually say that even the Avel in Yerushalayim will actually go up to Duchen. Again, not everybody does this, but what'd you say? So the way that it's... Right, so the way it's going is like this. Those that actually Duchen in the base of Avel, so again, Yerushalayim, and among the Sfardim also, many Sfardim also Duchen in the base of Avel. So many times they will have, many times the Avel himself will actually Duchen as well, which is like quite extreme, okay? But that's, again, in some places in Yerushalayim, in the old Yerushalayim, middle Yerushalayim customs, that's what sometimes they'll do. And by the Sfardim also, often the Avil, again, I don't know if they all hold this way, but often the Avil also will duchen. What's more accepted outside of Yerushalayim is that the Avil himself will not duchen, and he'll walk out. And, yeah. What'd you say? So that's the question. That's going to depend on, you know, exactly how this is going to work out here. Some places in Yerushalayim, what they may do, I saw this quoted in some of the Sfarim here, that the Avil himself, if he's the Chazan, he'll just be the Chazan and he won't duchen. Okay, in some places, if they would say the Avil would duchen, he would duchen even as the Chazan, the way that is generally accepted today in Eretz Yisrael, though again, that's also a discussion, how that works, but we're not going to go into that now. Outside of Yerushalayim, again, the different opinions, what I saw, my impression from the Sfarim that I saw, which includes the Gesher HaChayim and Rav Goldman here, and Mi'alom Yad Olam, and the Piskei Tshuvos, I saw this quoted, as well as another sefer called the Divrei Sofrim, if you're familiar with Divrei Sofrim. So all these from the I saw, they seem to believe that the accepted minhag outside of Yerushalayim is that not only does the Avil not duchen, but the other Kohanim do not duchen either. Okay, that's my impression of what was the accepted custom in many, many places outside of Yerushalayim, that nobody duchens in the base of Avil. And some people say Elokeinu v'Elokeinu instead, and some people do not. Okay. Rav Orly, on the other hand, told me that he felt that in some places the custom is outside of Yerushalayim also, that the Kohen himself does not duchen, but other Avelim do duchen. He sent me some link from a Rav in Beit Shemesh who was trying to maybe argue something like that. Unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to see it yet. So, so he felt that, you know, that some people do have the custom that the other Kohanim duchen in the base of Avil. The Avil himself would walk out, but the other Kohanim would duchen there. Again, my personal impression is that most of the Sfarim did not agree with that. That they felt that it was that nobody should duchen in the base of Avil. But again, we have different legitimate opinions here in terms of Birkas Kohanim, which again in Eretz Yisrael is very 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 relevant. Last point in this section before we finish up with the last part is in terms of learning between Mincha Ma'ariv. It's accepted today that we learn Mishnayos between Mincha Ma'ariv either from Mikvos that spell out the first letters of Nishama, Nun, Shin, Mem, Hey. There's one set of Mishnayos and Mikvos that's each Mishnah starts with a Nun, then a Shin, then Mem, then a Hey. So that's one custom. The other custom is that they learn Mishnayos. Each Mishnah starts with the first letter of the person's name. Okay, now here is a little, you got to be clever here, because if you don't know all your Mishnayos, Baal Peh, how are you going to find the right ones? So the Kati actually has a special sefer that they came out with, which they tell you all the Mishnayos that start with each letter, so you can do it pretty easily. If not, you got to search around and see what you can find. But that's the other custom. What's interesting, of course, is that the Avil himself is not allowed to learn Torah. Okay, that's in the books. That's the halacha, that the aval is not allowed to learn Torah during Avos. And on Tisha B'Av also, we also do not learn Torah on Tisha B'Av. That's the end of the comparison. The reasons for the two are a little bit different. The Pesukim and the Gemara that I quoted are not the same thing for either one. We're not going to go into that now. But there's still a question, well, how do you learn Mishnayos in the base of Avos if you can't learn Torah? It seems like the answer is that because it's accepted to do so for the purpose of helping the neshama up in Shemayim go a little bit higher for Le'ilu Nishmaso, so it seems that that's generally accepted to allow it. And usually, at least from what I've seen, the Avol does not usually walk out during the Mishnayos. He stays there. However, the only thing I would suggest is that it's not the opportunity for the Rav or whoever is giving the Mishnayos to teach them, you know, to go into a whole brisker lumbus about whatever he's teaching. It shouldn't be like a whole pilpul. Okay? It should be just simple understanding of the Mishnayos going through and perhaps trying to derive some sort of lesson which is appropriate for a base Avol, which when I teach Mishnayos, I often try to do that using Mishnayos from Pirkei Avos, where you can always learn something important about life and about death from Pirkei Avos. That's my practice, is to do that, and then already it becomes not just learning Torah, but also something which is appropriate for the context of a base Avol. Yeah? What do you mean?
Can you learn the
Halachos? Yeah, so that's an exception. That is correct. You're allowed to learn the Halachos of Avelus when you're in Avol. Okay, but when you're learning random Mishnayos about mikvos or about who knows what, so then that's already, one would ask, well, that's not the halachos of Avelos at all. Why are you allowed to learn that? And that's what people do. And the answer is, well, maybe because it's Le'ilu Nishmaso, especially if you learn Pirkei Avos or other things that you can sort of derive some sort of lesson, life lesson, a lesson that has something to do with the Niftar himself, etc., etc. Yeah. So the reason why, I'm sorry, maybe I forgot to mention it, I apologize. The reason why there's a problem of duchening is because the same reason we don't do it in chutz laretz, pirkas kohanim has to be done when you're besimcha. Okay? You're not allowed to duchen when you're not in a happy state of mind. And therefore, certainly the avol himself, and by extension, those that nobody duchens in the base avol, the idea is that we're not happy in the base avol. It's not a time of happiness. It's a time of sadness. And therefore, you can't duchen. Again, the problem is, of course, that it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, so to say that nobody can duchen only because the oval is there, that's why it's a little tricky in Eretz Yisrael, and that's why there might be different opinions. But again, my impression was that the more prevalent custom is that we don't duchen at all because it's not a happy place. Whoever's in the base oval is not, it's not a happy time for them, at least while they're there. Okay. Let's talk about Nichum Avilim, and we'll wrap up the shir. Nichum Avilim, of course, is a very, very important mitzvah. To comfort the mourner is something which the Gemara, I did not put the Gemara on the sheet here, but the Gemara, famous Gemara, says that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu comforted those that were bereaved. So too, we also try to imitate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we also comfort those that are bereaved. And basically, the idea is that we should come to the Beis HaAvel and try to just show that that we're there for them. Meaning, the point of the visit is not to go and start talking and talking and talking and talking to them and saying every single last thing that you did that day to make them, feel, oh wow, you want to get their mind off of the avilus a little bit. As we see here, the halacha, this is in the second to last source on the sheet here, on the source side. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Eino menachem rashaim liftoach. Those that come to comfort the mourner are not supposed to start the conversation. They can't begin. Ad sheyiftach ha'avil tchila, until the mourner himself begins. He's at front. Once he sort of nods his head in a gesture that you're supposed to leave, so then they have to leave. Again, today that doesn't happen so much. You don't often see Avilim and say, okay, get out of here. We don't want you anymore. But again, once you see, you've overstayed your welcome, so then you have to be sensitive and act accordingly. But what's the concept here? Meaning, why do we say that you can't start the conversation? Why does the Avil have to start? Any other reason? Nobody knows the reason. Exactly. That's the idea. The idea is right. We don't know. Every Avil is a little bit different, meaning different people have different personalities in terms of what they feel like doing, talking or not talking. And they may feel right now that they just don't want to talk. Maybe they may feel they want to talk about this. They want to talk about the funeral. Maybe they want to talk about some aspects of the person who passed away. And maybe they want to talk about yesterday's basketball. I guess here it's soccer game, but baseball, we're all, that's from whatever. Baseball, soccer, basketball, whatever sports you want to say, maybe that's what they want to talk about. So basically what you have to do is be sensitive to the fact that the Avel or Avelim have something in their mind that they're thinking about, and you have to sort of go with the flow. You have to be there for them to do what they want. Yeah.
I don't know, talking about yesterday's basketball game, the question last week, where Holy Angel fell on this, and the question arose was, who's it has been for? Is it for Neshama, or is it for Pilsen, or for the Avelim? I guess the question here is also, when you come to the Nachum Mendel, who's it for? Is it for them,
right,
or is it for the Neshama?
Right. So again, the main idea of Nichum Aveilim is to comfort the mourner, is Yikra Dechai, is for the living person. Of course, it's a nice opportunity, and the postman discussed this. It's an important opportunity in the Beis HaAvel to discuss, you know, that which the Niftar, what things that he did, things about his life that you can learn from. So at the end of the day, really, we're doing both things. And this is the point that I was going to mention right now. It is very important, and this is also mentioned in many of the Sfarim, it is important, ideally, that most of the conversation should be focused on the Avelus and on the person that passed away. Okay, that's the ideal. It doesn't always happen, and you'll find sometimes in certain, you know, places that people are just chattering about who knows what. Again, ideally, the best thing to do is to really be talking about the person who passed away and things that he did and how much you learned from him and his life, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you find that most people that come want to hear about him. They didn't come to just talk about the basketball game. They came because they wanted to learn something, they wanted to comfort you. And again, not all the time, but many times Avelim feel they want to talk about the person that passed away. He was special to them. And they want to relate things about his life to everybody else. And everybody has their stories, the history, and everything else. That's really ideally the way that it should be. Now, not every Avel is able to do that. Some Avelim really don't want to think about that, and they'd rather talk about some other kinds of things. So that's why we don't start, somebody who's coming to visit them doesn't start the conversation, we wait for them to talk. And if that's what they want to talk about, well, that's okay. But again, ideally the best type of conversation is that which discusses and focuses on the Avelus and on the person that passed away. And I've discovered, coming away from, you know, many Shiva houses that I've been to, that I always can find, if I'm listening carefully and the Avel is willing to tell stories and things about his relative, I've always discovered there's something I can take away from that, something I can learn from the person, and something I can take back to my own house, to my own life. And that's a very important point, not just for the Avel himself, but for all the people that come to visit the Menachemim, to really try to take something from the Niftar, and think about how he can affect your life. That by itself becomes something which will elevate his neshama even more so in Shemayim, and that itself also is, I think, and can tell me if you agree with me or not, is a source of tremendous comfort for the Avelim. The Avelim feel, you know, so much more satisfied, and things are meaningful when people are walking away and saying, "Wow, I learned so much from hearing about his lifestyle. This is something I can learn from as well." I think that's a very, very special thing. And that's something ideally which should take place if possible in a Beis HaAvel. Yeah, Josh.
I heard that another difference between Sfarim and Ashkenazim, that it's the opposite for Sfarim, that the Avel does not start the conversation, that the people who come to visit start the conversation, and you can get these situations when you have the Sfaradi visiting an Ashkenazi, and both of them are waiting for the other of them kind of open the conversation, to sort of the sensitivity they have.
I don't know. Anybody have any thoughts about that? Anybody know?
Or maybe it's a...
That wasn't my...
I'm not really sure.
I'm not sure. That's not my impression. Again, the Shulchan Aruch is pretty clear that that's the halacha, and I don't think people disagree with that. There may be some exceptions. I don't think this is what you're talking about. There are some posts that discuss possible exceptions. If you see the Avel is clearly uncomfortable, he's not a social person, he doesn't know what to say, he's just sitting there. And he's not just sitting there because he's deep in thought, he's sitting there because he doesn't really know what to say, and he feels really awkward. So in that case, there may be some leeway for the person to start, again, talking about something about the Avelos, about the Niftar, something like that. The example I saw here under Goldman Safer, he brings down here from Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer, probably had a story with the Chazon Ish, that people came to be Menachem the Chazon Ish when he was sitting on Avelus. And, I'm sorry, the other way around, the Chazon Ish came to be Menachem Avel, and the person was like in shock, you know, he couldn't move his lips, because the Chazon Ish was there in front of him. So he understood that the Chazon Ish had to start the conversation, because the Avel wouldn't be able to do it himself. So again, there may be some leeway for that in that situation, but again, you have to know that's the case. Many times the Avel just doesn't feel like talking at that moment, and have to make sure that you can see that the Avel is not ready to talk yet. But it's true. Again, I saw from my wife and her, their experience, they felt a little awkward sometimes. They didn't really know what to say. Luckily, my brother-in-law always had something to say. He always started with something, you know, "Oh, my father did this, my father did that," you know. But again, be sensitive to that also. If you see that you need to jump in to start the conversation, you can do so. But that's not the way that, you know, it's supposed to be ideal. Okay, a couple other points before we finish this up. In the outline here, number 2, we say that you're not supposed to greet the Avel. The last source on the sheet here, Avel Asr B'Sheila Shalom, that Avel is not allowed to be greeted. He's not allowed to greet or be greeted. Again, same idea that the Avel does not have Shalom right now. He's not in peace. He's obviously not in a complacent state of mind, and therefore you're not supposed to greet him either with the Shalom or a very strong hi, how are you, hello, it's nice to see you, just, you know, a nod of the head and, you know, whatever it is. That's an important halacha to mention. A few other points here. Again, number 3, so I wrote that it's very important to be sensitive to the needs of the Avel, not only in terms of starting the conversation, but also in terms of things that he needs. If he's tired, if it's not a good time for him, so to be cognizant of that and be able to adjust your schedule accordingly. If it's not a good time to go and say, you'll come back later. It's time to leave, etc., etc. In terms of what to say, so the Ashkenazim say, Hamakom Yenachem Eschem Esoch Shar Avi L'Tzion B'Yerushalayim. Some people say if it's an individual, one person, you say Hamakom Yenachem Oscha, you in the singular. Others say that even if it's only one Avel, you should still say Eschem in the plural, because really all the Avelim are viewed together. That was Rav Soloveitchik's position, that it's always an Eschem, even if it's just one Avel, it's always communal Avelus. Okay, good, that's another possibility, very nice. What'd you say? Okay, could be, again, there may be different versions of that. So again, but that you'll see both sides, meaning that's, you know, either the custom is legitimate. The Sfardim say something a little different, which is the Edur Mizrach say Minashamayim Tinuchamu, and the Temanim say the other way around. I think the Temanim say Tinuchamu Minashamayim, something like that. Whatever it is, it's all the same idea of wishing the person comfort. Of course, again, here also we mentioned Yerushalayim to bring in the communal Avelus of everybody else together with the individual Avelus. Ideally, it's recommended you're supposed to really stand when you're Menachem Avel, when you say the words, come in front of the person and stand, and then say Amokim Menachem Eschem or whatever it is. The halacha is really that you're supposed to do it in person. That's the comfort that's necessary. But if you can't get there, so it's accepted today. If you can't go, then to talk on the phone, to call them on the phone is second best. Maybe today email is third best. Again, email is already two levels down. But again, if you can't go, then that's, you know, it's better than nothing. But the real mitzvah is to actually be there in person. That's when the real comfort takes place for the people to actually be there. mentioned here also the first 3 days. There are some people that do not have the custom to be Menachem Avel during the first 3 days. It is based on the idea that the first 3 days it's very difficult for the Avel to come out and to feel the comfort. That's based on certain Gemaras. But again, the custom today is not to be mocked, but on that in most places. Usually people come whenever they can come, and any time during the Shiva is recommended to be Menachem Avel. If you cannot get there during the Shiva, so you can actually be Menachem Avel even during the Shloshim, or even during Yud Beis Chodesh, but especially during the Shloshim, if you see the person during the Shloshim and you didn't see them during the Shiva, you can still wish them the same Hamakim Menachem Eschem, whatever it is, the first time, if you didn't get to it beforehand. Again, just to conclude, that the Nichum Avelim, again, is supposed to the communal support of friends and other family members and, you know, extended family, community, whatever it is really supposed to be there to help the Avel get through a very trying time. The community is something which is important both in times of simcha and also in times of sorrow. And whatever community we're part of, it's important for us, not just as Avelim, when you'd be Avelim, God forbid, but on the other side, for the rest of the community to realize that, you know, your support is necessary, and your support doesn't mean that you have to be talking to the person the whole time. Your support just means that you're there. Just sit with them, just be there, and help out in whatever way is needed. If they need some people to buy things, to bring things, whatever it is, find out what's necessary, and just go and help out. I don't remember which story this was. One of the Gedolim, I don't remember what this was. Basically, they went and they sat down to Menachem Avel of somebody else, of another big Rav, and he just didn't talk to me. It was around color, I don't remember. Talking, half an hour, silence. He gets up to leave. He says, "Amakim Menachem Eschem." Person nods. That's it. Finally, later, again, I don't remember exactly how much later it was. At some point later, he contacted him and told him that your visit meant the most to me out of everybody else. Huh? I didn't do anything. I did not speak. I just sat there. But again, the idea is that sometimes, and my father discusses this in his book also, it's not just what is said; it's just the presence, just the fact that you're there with the person. That by itself is the source of comfort. You don't have to say a word. So, again, Zerah Hashem, we shouldn't need these halachas. They shouldn't come upon us. It shall only be Hilchas Adi Mashiach, only for the times of Mashiach. But again, hopefully, you know, when we are, you know, those who have been or are in the situation, we should be able to know the halachas and understand a little bit more of what's involved, and be able to hopefully get the comfort that that we need to slowly bring us back into the rest of our lives. And hopefully for the rest of us as well, we can support the Avol in the time of need, and also this time of year, that hopefully we can all take the lessons of the Churban Beis Hamikdash and Tisha B'Av and be able to come and turn the Avelus into Simcha and to celebrate with the coming of Mashiach.